Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Vatsan muchan kavicha samaye krosha sanja tahasaha steyam svayat Jatada dipaya kalpi taiste yo yogaha markan boksan vibaja tisachen nati bandam binati dravya labhe sagriha kupito yat kupa krosha yatosakan Vatsan muchan kavicha samaye krosha sanje tahasaha steyam svayat tadita tipaya kalpe taiste ya yogahai markan boksan vibaja tisachan yante bandam pimati dravya labhe Sagriha kupito yat kupa krosha yat tokan. Vatsan, the calves. Muchan, releasing. Kvachit, sometimes. Asamaye, at odd times. Krosha sanjat hasaha, after this, when the head of the house is angry. Krishna begins to smile. Steyam, obtained by stealing. Svadu, very tasteful. Ati, eats. Aha, thus. Dadipayaha, pot of curd and milk. Kalpitahai, devised. Strayagotahai, by some sort of stealing process. Markam, to the monkeys. Boksyam, given to it. Bibajali, divides their portions, saha, the monkeys, chet, if, na, not, ati, eats, bandam, the pot, binati, he breaks, dravya, alabe, when eatables are unavailable, or he cannot find such pots, sagriha, kupitaha, he becomes angry at the residents of the house, yati, he goes away, upaksh, krosya, irritating and pinching, tokaha, the small children. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Our dear friend, Yasoda, your son sometimes comes to our house before milking of the cows and releases the calves. And when the master of the house becomes angry, your son merely smiles. Sometimes he devises some process by which he steals palatable curd, butter, and milk, which he then eats and drinks. When the monkeys assemble, he divides it with them. And when the monkeys have their bellies so full that they won't take any more, he breaks the pots. Sometimes, if he gets no opportunities to steal butter or milk from a house, he will be angry at the householders, and for his revenge, he will agitate the small children by pinching them. Then, when the children begin to cry, Krishna will go away. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The narration of Krishna's naughty childhood activities would be presented to Mother Yasoda in the form of complaints. Sometimes Krishna would enter the house of a neighbor, and if he found no one there, he would release the calves before the time for the cows to be milked. The calves are actually supposed to be released when their mothers are milked, but Krishna would release them before that time, and naturally the calves would drink all the milk from their mothers. When the cowherd men saw this, they would chase Krishna and try to catch him, saying, "Here is Krishna doing mischief." But he would flee and enter another house, where he would again devise some means to steal butter and curd. Then the cowherd man would try to capture him, saying, "Here is the butter thief, better capture him." And they would be angry, but Krishna would simply smile, and then they would forget everything. Sometimes, in their presence, he would begin eating the curd and butter. There was no need for Krishna to eat butter, since his belly was always full. But he would try to eat it, or else he would break the pots and distribute the contents to the monkeys. In this way, Krishna was always engaged in mischief making. If in any house he could not find any butter or curd to steal, he would go into a room and agitate the small children sleeping there by pinching them. And when they cried, he would go away. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskachade Zatarne Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sri Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna is very playful. As a child, he would play in a most mischievous way. This would cause initially alarm to some of the adults, but then very quickly they would become very joyful just with interacting with Krishna. In this particular verse, people of the village of Vrindavan, they had gone to Mother Yasoda to make their complaints. They say, "Krishna, he releases the calves." When the cowherd men were keeping cows for a living, Nanda Maharaj had just gone to Mathura, to Kamsa, to pay his taxes. He was earning from his cows, selling the butter, selling the cheese, selling the curds. He was making money from this, and in this way he would survive and also pay taxes and so on. So the idea is that you keep cows, you give some of the milk to the calves, there's a surplus of milk which you sell in the marketplace. When Krishna released the calves to their mothers, the calves would, cows are famous for eating as much as they can. They just eat and eat and eat and eat until it's finished. People who keep cows actually have to limit what the cow wants to eat, because he'll make himself sick. He just eats too much, eats and eats and eats. So the calves, in this way, they would drink all the milk, and there would be no milk for sale in the market. So this was a very serious situation where Krishna was releasing the calves to get the milk. There was no milk for sale when he did this. In addition to not allowing any milk to be taken from the mothers because the calves were eating it, Krishna would always steal buttermilk and butter and milk and curd. He would steal these. And Vishwanath Chakravarti, he describes in his commentary on 10th canto, Krishna would often let the calves out to cause alarm when people rushed out of the house to forcibly take the calf away from its mother. At this point, Krishna would nip into the house. Then he would have an empty house. He would start stealing. Then, when he could no longer eat more, because his mother was feeding him and he was full, she always fed him very nicely. So when he could eat no more, Then he would invite the monkeys to eat. And then there was clay pots. He would break the pots so the monkeys could have much easier access to the pots. So the monkeys would eat, the clay pots would be broken. And then if ever he went into a house and there was no milk, then he would look and see if there was young infant babies sleeping in their sleeping place. And then he would pinch them with his nails. Vishwanath Chakravarti pinching them with his nails. And then so the children would cry, and once the baby's crying, he demands the mother's attention, and so on. And so these were the complaints that the ladies of the village would take to Mother Yasoda. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10:3:32, it's described that Krishna accepts parents on an eternal basis. They're eternally his parents. So they're going through these leelas again and again and again. The leelas are eternal. Because the ladies, all of the cowherd, all of the inhabitants in Vrindavan, the ladies, the men, the cowherd boys, the gopis, because they're so in love with Krishna, they don't understand that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's just someone who they love so much. They just, even it's described that the ladies would come to Mother Yasoda's house to complain. They had a genuine complaint, but the reason they were coming was just to see Krishna. They just wanted to see him. They just wanted to. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:27, it describes that as the sun rises, then that's a particular time of the morning. Today the sun rose at 5:26. We can say 5:30. The sun rose at 5:30, and then it rose in the sky, where in some place west of here at 5:30, five, at 5:40, at 5:50, at 7 o'clock, as the earth is moving, as the sun is moving relative to the earth, then at other places they have sunrise also. So we can say the sunrise rose today in India at 5:30. But England is 4.5 hours time difference. So in England, the sun would rise 9 o'clock in the morning. So in this way, just as the sun seems to be continually rising depending on where you're situated in the world, so also it's described that Krishna's pastimes are eternal. That eternally he does these things again and again and again and again. He's eternally doing them. So Srimad Bhagavatam 10:1:23 describes that there are innumerable universes which were emanating from Mahavishnu. Innumerable brahmandas, universes. And Krishna's pastimes are taking place in these innumerable universes continually. He's continually doing his pastimes. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 20, verse 397, says that they're eternal, that the original leelas are taking place in Goloka. And it describes in that verse that gradually the pastimes are taking place in the material world in all the various universes. Srila Prabhupada said that his Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, commented on this, because Prabhupada says this, he clarifies a complicated explanation. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, commenting on this verse, said, "We living entities had limited senses, and as such, we can't appreciate Krishna's leela. We're very limited in what we can conceive of, even what we can imagine. We're just very, very limited. And Krishna's beyond this. He's beyond our understanding. He's beyond our mental processes. So Bhaktisiddhanta says we have limited senses. We can't understand Krishna's pastimes. He says it's very difficult to understand them. But to have some understanding, we should think of the sun as it's going through the sky, and at different places on the earth, the sun appears to be rising at a different time. He said we should satisfy ourselves with this analogy because it's very, very difficult to fully understand Krishna's pastimes. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 9 says, Takta dehantara praptam naitimam etisarjuna. Krishna says, after leaving one's material body, the fully developed, the fully pure devotee, he will come to me. In Ujvala Nilamani by Rupa Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti has written a commentary on this. And in the commentary, he said, when a perfect devotee quits this body, then he will go to a planet in one of the material universes where Krishna is performing his pastimes. He said there he will be placed in the womb of one of the gopis, and he will be born there. And this will be in this universe or some other universe. He said first Krishna's father and mother will appear, then the other associates. And when the perfect devotee quits his body, he goes there to associate both with Krishna and to associate with all the associates of Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti, in his commentary on the 10th canto, Sarata Darshini, he describes Vatsalya Prem, the love which is generated by having parental attitude towards Krishna. And he says this phenomena is both astonishing and very, very uncommon, because Krishna is Vishaya. Krishna is the object of enjoyment. But Yasoda is Ashraya. She is the shelter. Now, usually, all over the world, where people are religious, they pray to God. They pray to God to save them from calamities. They pray to God to give them strength, to give them wealth. They see that Krishna, he is the ultimate shelter. And by petitioning him, they hope that they can have something from him. But Mother Yasoda, she has a completely different attitude. She is feeling, she's so loving towards Krishna, so blinded by love. She feels that she must give Krishna shelter. She must make sure he's clean. She must make sure he's fed. She must make sure he rests properly. She must see that he behaves himself with the other residents of the village. So she becomes somewhat disturbed when people are complaining about him. She said, why is he doing this? Why is he taking people's food? Doesn't he like my food? So then she thinks maybe her milk doesn't taste very well, because according to where the cows graze, their milk will have a particular flavor. In Switzerland, they're very, very famous for making chocolate. Very, very famous. Swiss chocolate is very famous. And in the springtime, as the snow melts on the mountains, and as the cows can go higher and higher to higher and higher pastures, then the milk from those pastures at that time in the springtime, it's used to make special types of chocolate. So people who are connoisseurs in chocolate, they can actually tell which altitude on the mountain the grass was eaten, the grass and the herbs were eaten, to give a particular flavor of milk. So it's very well known amongst people who keep cows that according to what the cow eats, she'll get a particular flavor of milk. So Nanda Maharaj, he had 6 or 7 different cows that decided only to eat very, very fine, fragrant grasses. And their milk was particularly tasty. So Mother Yasoda, she would keep this milk, especially for cooking things for Krishna, making nice things for him, because she thought this naughty boy, he's going and eating because he's hungry, because he doesn't like what I prepare for him. So this was her attitude, that she should provide for Krishna, that she should be his shelter, she should be his Ashraya. Ashraya is a very important concept, and it's a very important goal for the devotees. Ashraya is the ultimate shelter. It's a person's refuge. So in that consideration, we're all actually refugees seeking Krishna. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 10 different subject matters which are discussed throughout the Bhagavatam. The Sarga, Visarga, Vritti, Rakshaha, these all the way through, and these are the creation of the universe, what Brahma does with that creation, it's the protection of the devotees, it's the rain, the manvantars, the rain of the devotees, it's the tales of the Lord's incarnations, tales of the great saintly devotees, it's number 9 is hetum, which is what it is that motivates the jivas, why the jivas get an illusion, why everyone's not a pure servant of Krishna, why Krishna has to come to the material world. He said he comes to annihilate the demons and to delight, to please the devotees. So Krishna again and again and again has to, he says to Arjun, I taught this science to the sun god, Vivaswan, but in time the science was lost. So the living entity has a tendency to be in illusion. So this 9th one is, what motivates the jivas to act? And why do they act in various ways? And the 10th subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is this ashraya, taking shelter. In the Bhagavatam, first canto, 5th chapter, verse 40, it's called Narad Muni instructs Vyasadeva on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Narad says to Vyas, he said, you should describe the activities of the Supreme Lord because you have so much Vedic knowledge upon which you can draw. And he said, this would satisfy the hankerings of great men who and mitigate the suffering of the masses of people who always suffer from the pangs of material infliction. In that purport, Srila Prabhupada describes how Narad, he is instructing that the glories of Krishna are the prime solution for humanity. Prabhupada describes how there's 4 classes of men. And 4 of the classes, the pious people, intuitively, they seek the ashraya, they turn to Krishna when there's some difficulty. They're the distressed, those who want money, the inquisitive, and those who seek knowledge. And Prabhupada also quotes the 7:15, in which Krishna describes 4 classes of miscreants. Krishna says that one time Srila Prabhupada was making this point about the jiva. He said the conditioned soul is so stubborn Prabhupada said he refuses to surrender to Krishna, with a great emphasis on refusing. So we have stubborn miscreants that just refuse. They refuse. They're just going to try one more time. They're going to try it a different way. They've got a new plan. They've got a new thing. Some device. They're going to save. They've got some way in which they'll ultimately enjoy here in the material world, instead of understanding that our enjoyment is to take the ashraya, to take the shelter of Krishna. So these four classes are the grossly foolish, the lowborn, those whose knowledge have been stolen by illusion, and the atheistic class of man. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada continues, it says that Narad advised Vyas to compose the Srimad Bhagavatam so all eight classes of men, the pious and the impious, so everyone can get the advantage of understanding the process of bhakti as is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So for Bhagavatam is the complete science of executing bhakti yoga with a view to taking full shelter of Krishna. This is the entire purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam has inspired more literature, art, poetry, drama, dance, and theater than any other source at any time in history on this planet. There's such a wealth of culture which has been drawn from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly from the 10th canto. There's a Sanskrit saying, Vidya Bhagavat Avadi, that Srimad Bhagavatam is complete learning. It encompasses all fields of learning, the Srimad Bhagavatam. The oldest scholarly commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam is called the Tantra Bhagavata. And Madhvacharya was very, very fond of this. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in two places, in the 6th canto, again in the 10th canto, Srila Prabhupada, he cites Madhvacharya's commentary on the Tantra Bhagavata in two different places. So this is a very, very ancient commentary which the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and Srila Prabhupada, he accepts and respects. There are actually 80 old Sanskrit commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And there's many, many more in local languages. Many, many more. And in Bengali, there's actually been 40 different commentaries and reviews of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this includes Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Baladev Vidyabhusana, Vishwanath Chakravarti, and Bhaktisiddhanta. And Srila Prabhupada has now composed in English the definitive translation and commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is used by many, many people to avail themselves of the process of bhakti. Bhagavatam by BBT, Prabhupada's book publishing trust, it has published Bhagavatam in about 15 different languages. It's published Bhagavad Gita in 80 languages. And it has published some books on the science of bhakti, sometimes smaller books, in 174 different languages. So the Bhagavatam is said to contain 18,000 verses. However, if you go through chapter by chapter and note how many verses there are, it only adds up to 14,094 verses. So they say that there would have been 18,000 verses if the common method of reciting was used. So the common method of recital in the common meter is called anustab, and that was invented by Valmiki when he wrote the Ramayana. And this is the most common Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is in this meter. It's called octosyllabic. There's eight different syllables in a line, and there's four lines. That is the most common. And if the Srimad Bhagavatam would have been recited in that, it would have been 18,000 verses. So this is where you get the discrepancy from 18,000 and 14,094. They use this anustab because it's easy to remember, it's easy to recite, it's very useful in public recitations, in oral presentations. It's a very, very common, it's very just like in English language we use, it's very, very common iambic pentameter. Many of the poems, it's just a very easy, very, very simple to remember with the stresses and so on and so on. In 1946, an Indian gentleman, Mr. Valankar, he had been studying for years and noting the different meters, and he concluded that there are 600 different meters in the Vedic texts. And recently, much more recently, modern software has examined so many texts, and that concludes that there's a bit over 650 different meters. Today's verse was a very unusual format, and in that there were 68 syllables in the verse. There were four lines of 17, whereas the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is four lines of 8. So there are quite a number of verses which have more than the octosyllabic, the 32 syllables, and this is how we come to this figure of 18,000 verses. The Srimad Bhagavatam, as I said, it has been the source of vast literature, drama, commentaries, and it was first translated into an English language, into a European language, in 1788. It was translated from Tamil in South India into the French language. And then from the French language it went into English and German and so many other. And this absolutely intrigued scholars because it opened up a whole different understanding. Krishna's playfulness, the different rasas, it was just absolutely astounding that such a literature existed. Wordsworth, he wrote a poem on first looking into Chapman's Homer. So Homer, it's in Greek, and a gentleman called Chapman, he translated it, and from this the whole Western world understood about the play, the epic, the Iliad, the Odyssey by Homer. So similarly, this French person, he opened up the whole understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam to the Western world. BBT, now Srila Prabhupada, he writes the definitive version, and now it's in 15 different modern languages. The whole world now can obtain bhakti. Vishwanath Chakravarti said that in his Sarata Darshini, he said that Mother Yasoda and the gopis, they would compose verses on Krishna. And when they were going about their work, they would chant these verses to remind themselves of Krishna when Krishna wasn't actually in their presence. So the gopis, particularly Mother Yasoda, she would constantly be chanting, remembering Krishna. And Remembering Krishna is the goal. The goal of bhakti is to engage in the nine processes, hearing, chanting, remembering, and it was to take these processes of bhakti yoga to the Western world that Srila Prabhupada went to the United States and started preaching, started temples, and started the Hare Krishna explosion, as one devotee described it in his book. Today is the disappearance day of one early devotee from 1967. Srila Prabhupada went to New York in 1966. In 1967, Mukunda Prabhu, now Mukunda Maharaj, he went to San Francisco and he started up the Hare Krishna movement. They invited Srila Prabhupada to come to give different public talks, and a newspaper announced in 1967 that this Swami from India, he was staying at a particular place and giving talks on Eastern philosophy. So there was a young man there called Jim, and Jim was 28 years old, which was quite a bit older than most of the people who became devotees, because mostly they were teenagers and Vaisheshika Prabhu, I think he said he joined the devotees when he was 15, and that was a common age. A lot of people were 16, some were 18. You were quite a senior person if you were 21 years old. It was just all young people who were joining Prabhupada. So Jim, he was 28 years old. And he was an educated person. He had a degree from a university in Ohio in industrial engineering. But in 1955, Sputnik was put up, first Sputnik rocket went up with a satellite. Then in 1958, NASA followed them. It was, they were trying to go to the moon and so on. So there was a lot of work in this area of industrial engineering. There was a lot of oil, it was a huge field. But somehow or other, Jim felt that he didn't want to do that with his life. He didn't want to associate with these people who were very, very materially ambitious. So he went to San Francisco. So the difference from his hometown of Dayton in Ohio, which is near the New Vrindavan community, the distance between there and San Francisco is the same distance, it's 3,800 kilometers. It's the same distance from Leh in Ladakh all the way down to Kanyakumari. That's the distance. So he must have passed through a lot of different places where he could have stopped, but he went all the way to San Francisco. And instead of working as an engineer, he had a simple job as a taxi driver. He was by himself most of the time. He was out in the fresh air. He was just going about his own business in a very reclusive type way. When he saw this article, a small article in the newspaper, the Swami had come. So he went to see the Swami. And he's one of the very first devotees in San Francisco. Immediately he liked the Swami. He was a tall person. He was 2 meters tall. He was very, very well built and educated. Whereas the other people were wearing fancy clothing in hippie style. He had a white shirt and he was like an engineer. He had a white shirt and a tie, black jacket and like this. And Prabhupada liked him very much immediately. And Prabhupada would go in the morning to hear Srila Prabhupada speak. And sometimes he was the only person there, because a lot of the other people, they were up late, sleeping late. And up late, sleeping late. And Sometimes he was the only person listening to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada would take him into his quarters to cook from him and so on. So at that time, he had received from one of his aunts, he had received some money. It was $5,000. And this $5,000, he decided to give it to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, but no, you should keep this money. This money has been given to you. He said, Srila Prabhupada, I wouldn't know what to do with $5,000. But you know what to do with it. You're preaching, you're running programs, so you please take it. So Prabhupada took it, and originally it was intended to be used for publishing Bhagavad Gita. But when they got the contract from Macmillan, then that was spare money. And later in 1967, when Srila Prabhupada had a mild stroke and he wanted to go back to India for medicine, he used this money, part of this money, to fly. He had a ticket with Srimati Mararji and the Scindia Shipping Company. He had a ticket, he had a return ticket. But he decided to fly, and he took with him Kirtanananda, and then Srila Prabhupada came back. He was gone for about 5 months. So that $5,000, in today's money, it's the money with inflation has multiplied 7.9 times. And so it would be equivalent of $40,000 today, today's money. And in rupees, at today's rate of exchange, is 29 lakhs of rupees, or 2.9 million rupees. That's how much the $5,000, if you think about it, in today's money. So it was a lot of money, even in those days. So Prabhupada was expressed reluctance to take it, but Jayananda insisted, no, you take it, Srila Prabhupada, you can use it. He was such an amazing person. Those who know him say he was just very, very amazing. He was very hardworking. He was very humble. At one point, Srila Prabhupada suggested he take sannyas. And he said, Prabhupada, how can I take sannyas? I'm just a sudra. How can I be a Brahmin sannyas? And Prabhupada laughed, and he laughed also. So they had a very, very sweet, very, very friendly relationship. He was very he would deal with everyone very nicely, with the police, with homeless people, with city officials. In 1967, they did the first Rath Yatra. They just hired a truck with a flat back, and they put Balaram, he was the only deity at that Rath Yatra, they put him on the truck and they just drove around, and about 50 people joined in. And that was the first Rath Yatra. But then he saw pictures of a Rath cart. It was actually a South Indian Rath cart, and it had various domes on it. So for the next year, they did that. And then the third year, he finally saw pictures of the Rath cart and understood that it was from Puri. And then so they made the Puri style Rath Yatras. But he was so successful in dealing with the officials, asking them very nicely, very humbly. He was an older person, he was an educated person, he was a very friendly, very nice person. So he would charm people. And so for this wild spectacle, these big carts coming, they gave permission. And one of the mayors of San Francisco, Joseph Aliotta, in 1975, he actually declared Rath Yatra Day. So I think it's June 20th or 23rd. June 20th, 1975, was declared Rath Yatra Day. So there are big days like Independence Day, and there's big parades. But so they were officially allowed to have forevermore a big festival in San Francisco on that dedicated day. The Srila Prabhupada explained to the devotees when he set up the Los Angeles temple. He said that one person, it was Dayananda, he would be the president, and Prabhupada explained what the president's duties were. And another devotee was designated, it was Madhuvisa, explained to him that he was the treasurer. And he says the treasurer's job is not to spend any money. You're just really, really reluctant to spend money. So the ISKCON treasurers all over the world, it's very, very difficult to get any money from them for anything. They just don't want to spend the money. They have limited money. They don't want to spend it. So similarly, there's various government officials, and their job is just not to allow anything. Just so, no. So there was one such lady in the department in San Francisco, and she was in the processions and public events department in the town hall in San Francisco. And her job, she was doing her job very well, was just to refuse permission for everything. No, can't do it, sorry. And for a number of different reasons. Because she knew the police had to get involved, they had to close streets, there were new traffic had to be diverted. It was like a whole thing to block off part of the city and have a parade. It's a big deal. So she would just say, no. But Jayananda, he was just very kind, he was very charming, he was very pleading. So although she had a very, very strong nature, she allowed the Rathiyatras because Jayananda had asked her. And then Jayananda, he finally died in 1977 after being 10 years with Srila Prabhupada. And when other devotees went to see the lady, she immediately says, "Where's Johnny Ananda?" And they said, "Oh, he died." And she was struck. And she took her glasses off. And she was just crying. She just loved him so much. Although she only saw him once a year when he was getting permission. But she just thought, oh, he said, and she was so sad that she won't see him again and that he died. Such was the effect that he had on people. And anyone who did help or give any permission, he would, after Rathiyatra, he would either bake pies or bake cakes. And he would personally go to each of the people with a nice prasadam cake and say, "Please, take this, this is for, thank you very much." And so he was very, very reciprocal. And even devotees would sometimes be in rough places and they would see some rough people, at times even becoming a little fearful. And the people would look at them and see their devotees and say, "Hey, where's our friend, Johnny Ananda?" And so all kinds of people, from policemen, there's a very famous picture in which a policeman on his motorbike, traffic cop, he gets off his bike, he's got his hat, he's just this big, mean guy, and Jayananda, it just goes up to him and he has his hands in namaste right in front of the policeman's face, and he just begs him to, "Please, we're leaving, allow us to go." And then the policeman, he allowed him. So he was a very, very amazing, amazing person. He was expert at cooking, loved to cook and loved to eat prasadam, and loved everybody to get prasadam. When he was doing the Rathiyatra, he would stay there on the site and he would cook prasadam for everyone. He loved halva with different fruits in it, different nuts and fruits, rich halva. He loved samosas, and he loved potatoes and paneer sabji. Those are the things. And everyone just, he told the new people that they had to eat so much prasadam that they couldn't walk straight. And you had to waddle like a duck because you'd just eaten so much. And he loved prasadam, he would insist upon it. He died of cancer, he died of leukemia, and he was on a drip, he was getting fed by a drip. And he had money for treatment, but he spent the money for the treatment on the Los Angeles Rathiyatra. He didn't get the treatment. Perhaps he could have lived. He just spent. But he would tell the devotees to make sure the nurse doesn't see him, but bring him some samosas and bring him some potato sabji. So he would eat the samosas and the where he's not supposed to eat any. He was a good preacher. He always preached to the new people. There are a couple of preaching episodes on YouTube. You can hear him preaching, Jayananda. He was very, very persuasive. He would tell people they just have to surrender to Krishna. You must surrender to Krishna. There's no other alternative. It's the only thing that's going to make us happy. He had great faith in Sankirtan, the holy names. He would go out in Sankirtan. He loved japa very intently. He would chant his japa. He did deity worship. He was, of course, a good public relations person. He would do public relations, sales. At that point, the temples were being financed by selling incense, and he would sell incense. He would go out on an incense, go to the different shops, you know, persuade them. So he was very, very expert at sales. He was an engineer by training, so he was very, very good at construction. He could construct anything, and he was a mechanic also. So he would fix the cars. Because not that he was a trained mechanic, but he had an engineering aptitude, so he could just apply himself to this. I think he's sort of like a mix between Vibhuti Chaitanya, who was our cook here for many, many years, and because he was just cooking and cleaning and you know, just doing what it takes without any complaints and doing a vast amount of work. When finally Vibhuti Chaitanya stopped doing it because he was old and ill, it took three people to replace him. Three very hard working, he was doing the work of three men. And I think he's also a mix of someone like Sanat Sanatan, who's very much into engineering and constructing things, very analytical, finding how to do things. And also a kirtan man who really loved kirtan. Perhaps not as dedicated as Iyendra, who was a full-time kirtan person. And Jayananda became the temple president. There was so many things he was doing. Rathiyatra is a big festival to build three big carts, to get the permissions, to see all the officials. Hundreds and hundreds of devotees would come and stay at the temple, sleep on the roof, sleep in the corridor, sleep everywhere. And then there was prasadam to be provided for all these people. And so, as well as all the helpers. And then he was cooking all the cakes, and for weeks distributing cakes and taking them to the people who had helped. So he wasn't a dedicated kirtan man, but he loved kirtan. So we have this Vibhuti Chaitanya, this Sanat Sanatan, this Iyendra, all rolled into one. And he was the humblest person that anyone had ever met. So he died in May 1977 in Los Angeles. And when Prabhupada got the news, he said that his disappearance day today should be celebrated in all the temples of ISKCON. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta, just like Bhaktivinoda, just like Narasimha Das Thakur, just like all the great, great devotees, Baladeva Vidyabhusana, Prabhupada put him on that level with those, give him that stature. And he said that his picture should be on the Rathiyatra cart. So every year in San Francisco and all over the world, his picture is on the front of the cart, a big framed picture. So Prabhupada dedicated Rathiyatra to him and said that we should observe his disappearance day. So it was actually very fortuitous that he died before Srila Prabhupada, for quite honestly, in retrospect, people say, oh, he was great, he was so humble, but no one really recognized him at the time. No one was thinking he's a pure devotee. He was just a humble guy who was working hard, who didn't want credit for anything he was doing. But people, Prabhupada immediately, he recognized this. And many, many times, if you go through the folio, many times Srila Prabhupada said, he gave me $5,000, which was like a lot of money. It's 30 lakhs of rupees. And that was the very first money that Srila Prabhupada ever got. And that money allowed Prabhupada to go, come back to India to get his medicine. He was here for 5 months. He came back again. He was renewed. So it was a very, very fortuitous that he died first, because then Prabhupada gave him that status which he may not have had. Well, one time, 67, when they were doing the first thing and making things for the cart, anyone who came along, Jayananda would engage them. So there was this one guy, he said, hey, do you want to help? He said, yeah. So he had him hammering nails around this whole thing, and the guy was there just working and, you know, doing the whole thing. So that gave him a very nice taste for devotional service. So a year later, he was a Canadian citizen, a year later in Montreal, he took initiation. And that person was Jaipataka Swami. So in 2012, Jaipataka had constructed a very, very beautiful samadhi for Jayananda Prabhu, which is in Mayapur at the Jagannath Temple. So that person who had Jaipataka Maharaj hammering some nails, of course gave him prasadam, told him he was doing a great job. He was a wonderful PR man, he was a wonderful preacher, and we devotees have so much to aspire to have the qualifications and the attitude that Jayananda Prabhu does. Jayananda Prabhu ki jai. Hare Krishna.